This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Welcome to Aaron Mankey's Cabinet of Curiosities, a production of iHeartRadio and Grim and Mild.
Our world is full of the unexplainable. And if history is an open book, all of these amazing tales are right there on display, just waiting for us to explore. Welcome to the Cabinet of Curiosities. Few of us perform the same jobs for our entire lives. Some may go from stocking shelves as teens to selling stocks when we're older. We may even change careers entirely later in life. No one is defined by what they do for a living. It's just a piece of who we are, along with our families, our friends, and the hobbies we enjoy in our free time. But for one woman, her job didn't just come to define her. It changed the way that we see the entire universe. Born in Dundee, Scotland in 1857, Wilhelmina eventually became a teacher and was married at 20 to an accountant named James Orr Fleming. In 1878, Mr. and Mrs. Fleming emigrated to the United States, settling in Boston, where they had a son, Edward. Sadly, Wilhelmina's life took a dark turn sometime later when her husband up and left the family. Forced to find work outside of the house, she took a job as a maid for a man named Edward Charles Pickering. He ran the Harvard College Observatory with a staff of several male assistants for clerical work, such as classifying stars. But one day, Pickering, upset with the quality of work being done by his assistants, shouted, "My Scottish maid could do better." Well, his wife agreed and encouraged him to bring Fleming on as an assistant. And Wilhelmina excelled, transitioning from dusting and changing diapers to studying the data coming into the observatory. Pickering even taught her how to analyze how light, or spectra, broke down from the stars. She then viewed this spectra on photographic plates provided to her by him. He obtained these images by positioning a prism in front of the telescope's lens, which split the light into a spectrum of darkened light bands. Much like a fingerprint, each array was unique, and it was Fleming's job to examine them and record any anomalies. And she did, Cataloging the stars based on the amounts of hydrogen present in their spectra. Now, her official title might be confusing to folks today. It was computer, which was what typists and analysts were called back then. She even started a group at the college called the Harvard Computers, made up entirely of women who worked for Pickering doing jobs just like hers. But she didn't stop there. Wilhelmina went above and beyond, earning a spot on a new project called the Henry Draper Catalog. It was being funded by Mary Anna Draper, whose late husband Henry had been an astronomer and the first person to take a photograph of the moon using a telescope. Wilhelmina was appointed the leader of the project, but wound up butting heads with her colleague and fellow astronomer, Antonia Maury. Maury wanted to classify the stars using their temperatures, size, and the strength of their spectra. It was a more complicated way of organizing the data, whereas Wilhelmina chose to utilize a simple alphabetical method for classifying the stars instead. Eventually, Wilhelmina's system was improved by another computer, Annie Jump Cannon, who organized the stars based on their surface temperatures. This became known as the Harvard System of Spectral Classification and is still used to this day. The Henry Draper catalog was completed in 1890 and contained over 10,000 stars, many of which had been classified by Wilhelmina herself. Her work eventually earned her the position of curator of astronomical photographs at Harvard, the first woman to step into such a role. But perhaps her most recognized accomplishment occurred 2 years before the publication of the Henry Draper catalog. In 1888, Wilhelmina was examining a photogrammetry plate given to her by William Pickering, Edward's brother. She noted a nebula among the constellation Orion, with a semicircular indentation, 5 minutes in diameter, 30 minutes south of Zeta Orionis. To the average stargazer, it looked just like a horse, hence its name, the Horsehead Nebula. She also went on to identify the first white dwarf star, although her name was left off of almost every one of her discoveries. Almost all of them had been attributed to the Pickerings. It would be another 20 years before she'd get the credit that she rightly deserved. Wilhelmina Fleming started out her career as a maid, an important job for sure, but one that seriously underutilized her talents. She went down in history as a prolific astronomer, a staunch supporter of women in science. It turned out that Edward Pickering was right all along. His Scottish maid could do better.
Hey, this is Jody Sweetin from the podcast How Rude, Tanneritos. As a nostalgic voice from your past, I'm here to remind you that amongst the stressful and chaotic existence we live in 2024, you deserve to get away. It's time for a vacation, no matter when you're hearing this. And let me tell you how you'll get there. The 2024 Hyundai Santa Fe. Want to bring the family to the mountains with the Santa Fe's available H-Track all-wheel drive? Well, it's got standard third-row seating and available dual wireless charging pads for the kids who just want to stare at their phone and not talk to you. You know what I mean. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, I'm Cindy Crawford, and I'm the founder of Meaningful Beauty. Well, I don't know about you, but, like, I never liked being told, oh, wow, you look so good for your age. Like, why even bother saying that? Why don't you just say you look great at any age, every age? That's what Meaningful Beauty is all about. We create products that make you feel confident in your skin at the age you are now.
Meaningful Beauty. Beautiful skin at every age. Learn more at meaningfulbeauty.com.
At JCPenney, fashion counts for everybody and everybody. It's spring, and with the weather changing and so many great things coming up like Mother's Day and the Wind Down Tour, I definitely need a fresh spring wardrobe for every occasion. This spring, I'm looking for that perfect flowy spring dress for Mother's Day, as well as replacing my everyday basics. That's what I love about JCPenney. They have so many stylish and comfortable options that I always find just what I'm looking for there. Spring is a feel-good season and comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. The fashion at JCPenney is the same way. Refresh your wardrobe this spring with styles that gets you, something to wear that fits your favorite moments of the season at prices that feel just as good. Discover brands that get you and put style and comfort first, like Worthington and Liz Claiborne for her, each in women's petite and plus sizes, and Stafford and Mutual Weave for him, style and comfort for all, even big and tall. Plus even more for the whole family like Levi's and Exertion. Here, spring comes in all shapes, sizes, and colors. JCPenney, make everybody count.
Humankind is no stranger to atrocity. Look throughout history, and it's clear that there isn't much humanity to be found within humanity. And few horrors measure up to what the Nazi regime carried out during the Second World War. They murdered millions and performed countless acts of torture on men, women, and children from all over Europe. At the center of it all was the Nazis' belief that the world should be rid of inferior races and populated with only the finest Aryan offspring, children who were deemed what they called racially pure and of pure blood. And so in 1935, the Lebensborn Project was started. It was the brainchild of Heinrich Himmler, Hitler's second in command, and one of the main drivers behind the Holocaust. Lebensborn, or Fount of Life, became a primary endeavor for Himmler in his pursuit of eugenic supremacy for the Nazis. It was originally centered around providing support for families who were of the proper lineage, with big sarcastic air quotes here in the recording booth, trust me. This also meant caring for wards of the state, and single mothers if they were of the correct racial and biological makeup. Single pregnant women who needed help could come to a Lebensborn maternity home and give birth without facing judgment from their family. But unfortunately, the initiative grew into more than a welfare system for down-on-their-luck German women. The goal was to increase the birth rate, and so women were often recruited to partner with SS officers in order to give birth to the next generation of Nazi soldiers. And the program wasn't just confined to Germany, either. By 1939, numbers were not growing fast enough, so more extreme measures needed to be taken. The Nazis kidnapped children from other countries, such as Norway and Russia, and the native populations of those countries also gave birth to half-German offspring, the fathers being Nazi soldiers. One of those children, born in November of 1945, was Annie Fried Sinni Lyngstad. She was born in Ballingen, Norway, where she lived with her father, a Wehrmacht sergeant, and her mother and grandmother. After the war, her father went back to Germany, though, leaving Annie Fried and her family behind. However, they didn't stay there for long. Afraid that they might be attacked for helping the Nazis, Annie Frieda and her grandmother fled to Sweden while her mother stayed back in Norway to work, reuniting with them a few years later. After the tragic passing of her mother to kidney failure at the young age of 21, young Annie Fried and her grandmother moved around Sweden before settling down in 1949. She had a lonely upbringing, but spent many of her summers with her aunts and uncle back in Norway, giving her a connection to her home country. And when she returned to Sweden, her grandmother was there to welcome her back. Annie Fried's grandmother often sang old Norwegian songs around the house, instilling a love of music in her granddaughter. This passion blossomed as she grew up. She performed in school and around town for others. But her first real foray into professional entertainment came when she was a teenager, kicking off her career by singing with a 15-piece big band. She trained on jazz standards and came to idolize the vocal stylings of American singers like Ella Fitzgerald and Peggy Lee. As she got older, Anna Fried went on television and won a record deal after her first appearance. This ultimately led to her first album, titled Frida, after her nickname growing up. It was released in 1971 and produced by Benny Andersson, her fiancé at the time. Benny was friends with another married couple, Agnetha and her husband Bjorn, who performed as backup singers on one of Frida's hit songs. They sounded good together, too, and over the next few years, the foursome began singing under the name Bjorn and Benny, Agnetha and Annie Fried, which didn't exactly quite fit on any marquees. It wasn't until 1973 when the band's manager, Stig Andersson, helped them find their new identity. He'd been referring to them with the shorthand version of their names for a while, and decided to just make it official. From that point on, Bjorn and Benny, Agnetha and Annie Fried were no more. Using just their initials, he combined them together into a single word, and the rest was musical history. World War II led to some truly horrendous crimes by some of the worst people on the planet. But out of that horror came a voice, one that went on to define a generation. The voice of ABBA. I hope you've enjoyed today's guided tour of the Cabinet of Curiosities. Subscribe for free on Apple Podcasts or learn more about the show by visiting curiositiespodcast.com. This show was created by me, Aaron Mankey, in partnership with How Stuff Works. I make another award-winning show called Lore, which is a podcast, book series, and television show, and you can learn all about it over at theworldoflore.com. And until next time, stay curious.